With us for this edition of Our Town is Florence's own Fire Marshal, Tony Miller, with the Siuslaw Valley Fire and Rescue Fire Prevention Office. He's just returned from the bootleg fire in southern Oregon, which has burned over 400,000 acres since July 6th. It's Oregon's largest wildfire in over a century, exacerbated by severe drought conditions. Thanks for coming in, Fire Marshal Miller.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You just returned from fighting the bootleg fire. Tell us a little bit about how that came about.
Well, so we're part of the Lane County Task Force, or the strike team. So we're part of a group of firefighters that have volunteered to come in and basically go on call at the drop of a hat. So they call us and they say, you have 30 minutes to be at the station, bags packed, ready to go, take care of your loved ones, and you hit the road, and then we meet up wherever that might be. It might be Goshen Fire Department, might be Coburg. Just depends on the fire station where they want us to meet, depending on the location of where we're actually getting dispatched to. When we got the call, it was one of those things. They said, meet at Goshen Fire Department, and you need to be there by 4:30, and we were there by 4 o'clock. So we were ready to go and up and rolling, and we left at 4:30 in the afternoon to head to the Bootleg Fire in Klamath Falls.
So. And Florence has a history of sending people all over the country to fight fires. So this group that you're part of, is it part of the Siuslaw Valley Fire and Rescue, or is it people coming in from all over?
It's a county ran. It's through our fire defense board. And what they do is they help manage that, and they know what the capabilities are. And coming into fire season, they always ask each individual fire department that's actually involved in the Lane County team. They ask them, hey, what can you commit to, right? Staffing, what type of piece of equipment you can send, those kind of things. And they do that prelim of the season coming into effect so that way they know where they can allocate resources and what they can put together as teams and send where they need to. Because depending on the fire season, situation depends on what type of vehicle they might need. They might need a structure protection vehicle, which we call a type 1, or they might need a brush rig, or a type 6 is what we call it, which is a quick response for wildland firefighting. It actually has smaller water capabilities. It's more agile. It's four-wheel drive, gets you into more tighter places. Or they might just need what we call a water tender, and that might be what they need. So they just, whatever the resources, they try to pre-plan that and prepare it going into the season so that they know what people can allocate for the season.
So the folks we have out there fighting fires and saving people's homes and trying to save lives, they come from all over the place.
Yes. Well, the Bootleg Fire, we've seen personnel from Texas, Montana, Idaho, California, Washington. There were several states that were involved. And when we left, they even were talking about pulling some resources, maybe even from Australia, which we've seen that in the past too as well. When I was down in Santa Rosa in 2017 for the LNU fire, that they had some people from all over the world that were there.
And this is huge. It's consuming miles of fire each day. Can you talk a little bit about your experiences while you were down there? What's it like to fight a fire during fire season? That's, you know, I mean, it's a huge fire.
Well, you know, every fire is just a little different. I can speak for the Klamath fire, or the Bootleg fire, I should say. It was a lot different. This run that we went and did was supposed to be structure protection. When we showed up over there, we were assigned a structure protection. So we go in, we do a lot of triage on homes, evaluating them, deciding on what we can do to help defend that home when the fire comes in. And so we do a lot of that. But on this particular case, we started doing that, but there weren't a lot of structures in the area. And so what they kind of did was shift our directions more towards wildland firefighting. So we shifted and started helping with the hand crews, supplying them water, putting out hot spots. Hot spots are just areas in the fire that are still burning, and they're just trying to get us to put it out. We also worked the fire line. So when they put in a fire line and they say, this is where we want to try to stop it, fire will come up to that edge and stop. And then we were coming in and putting out anything that might be hot still in what we call contingency area. So we go 25 feet, 50 feet, 100 feet into what we call the black, which is the area that's been burned. So when it comes to jobs and things like that on the fire, they can all change based on the fire. So and in this case, we were called to be a structure protection crew, and we were doing multi-jobs. And we really weren't designated to one specific area. We worked everything from the southwest corner all the way to the northeast corner of the fire. And we covered all that distance in between.
You go where they need you.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you do it immediately. When they say, hey, this is your assignment, you're going. And the days are long. You work a 12-hour shift.
A 12-hour shift of really hard work.
Yes. And it, actually, believe it or not, it's a little bit easier. California does 24-hour shifts. So
wow. Like that's like nursing.
So, yeah. Right? So you're literally working a pretty long shift. And depending on the detail of the work depends on the physicality of it. So sometimes it's more physical, sometimes it's more mental. So just depending on what you're doing.
You say the fire lines and, you know, the water brigade, and like everybody knows what that means. Can you walk us through that and tell us like what that actually looks like when you're on the ground working? What does it mean to create a fire line?
These breaks, right. Well, depending on situation, sometimes they use existing roads as fire breaks. Sometimes they'll go in and use heavy equipment to take out trees and mow a path that has nothing that can burn in it. And those are just contingency lines to try to, or lines that are put in place so that the fire can burn up to it. So that's kind of how they get created, is by heavy equipment. And that heavy equipment could be anything from cutting down trees, mowing down brush. A dozer will go in and actually take up the soil and get rid of anything and push it so that it's got a wide open spot. California is a real prime example. They do fire lines that could be 30 feet wide, 40 feet wide. And we've seen them as well here in Oregon too as well. And it just depends on what type of vegetation that you're in, depends on what kind of line that you're actually trying to create.
Because in windy weather with droughts, that can jump a pretty thick line otherwise.
Yeah, definitely. Well, with winds, they blow embers, brands fly, found them miles away from where the fire lines were. So you need to have those lines in place, and sometimes they need to be wider than what you can do with just a road. So sometimes you have to widen that road and create buffer zones, and sometimes even contingency lines. So you'll create a line, then you'll go in another 100 feet and you'll create another line. And that way, in case if one jumps another, we have backups to backups.
So one of the things you're doing is containing that fire so that nothing outside of the space you're creating can burn.
Correct.
And it doesn't always work.
Yes, that's true.
How close are you to the actual fire lines, and how dangerous is it?
This particular fire for the bootleg, we were in some situations that the fire was right there where we were at. We had a situation where the fire actually jumped the line, and our job was to try to put out the hot spots that were on the other side of the line. And so that's what we were trying to do. And as the fire came to us, winds pick up, right? Temperature increases, more embers were flying. So what happened was more spot fire started happening inside our area that we didn't want the fire. So in that particular case, we actually had to evacuate the hill. And that was given orders just as far as firefighter safety. They were just trying to protect us. There was nothing but forest land that was there. So there wasn't any structures to protect. And so with that, life safety becomes the first priority. So that's what happens.
Absolutely. I can feel it in the pit of my stomach that, you know, there's a loss there, right? You lose some feet, you lose to the fire itself. That's got to be rough.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because structure firefighters like myself and our fire department, we're more on that structure side of it. And so we're used to winning. Right. So we're used to being able to put the fire out and succeeding, and we just put more water on it. We're good. When you're in the wildland firefighting situation, you don't always win. Sometimes you just have to take a step back and go, OK, we didn't win this one. We're going to move out and we're going to make another stand. And that was a little difficult for me after that particular situation that we were talking about. When it jumped our line, they pulled us out and said, yeah, we're not going to be able to stop it. I went back to camp and I felt a little deflated, you know, like, wow, I didn't do my job very well. And our task force leader came up, talked to us about it a little bit and just said, hey, you know, this is part of wildland firefighting. You don't always win. And sometimes you have to regroup and start again the next day or in an hour from now. So that was a tough pill to swallow for myself, if I have to admit, because I come from the area of structure firefighting, and we win.
And it's hard to watch that devastation, I would think, as well. You said that you specialize in prevention and that there are new methods and techniques being used these days in fires and to protect some of those structures. And you said you got to see some of that at work.
Yeah. So when we go in to do structure protection, a lot of the times what we do is we evaluate the house that we're looking at and we say, okay, what measures can we actually take? And in this fire, we actually had a cabin that was not really a cabin. It was a home on cattle land. So it was a big ranch. And the house was pretty well built. So we actually had metal roofing, had pretty good metal siding on it. So the material that the house was built out really helped us. And so when we looked at it, we said, hey, we can take this group of people and we can actually rake the driveway, get rid of the pine needles, pull away material that can be flammable away from the house. We can limb up trees so that when the fire does come through, it's only burning small, flashy fuels, pine needles, small grass. And that's not enough heat to transfer, or flame impingement to actually transfer to a tree. So to catch the bark on fires, right? The bark is very resilient. So we were taking measures of limbing up trees, allowing the fire not to get up into the trees, and to rake away anything that would be light, small, quick burning that wouldn't go right up to the house. And so when we were all done, we came back to this house that I was talking about several days later after the fire had actually come around it, and it actually worked. Everything that we had done was exactly the way we had planned it.
So you can go back in and see a fire just sort of consume everything around it and still know that you've protected that structure or somebody's house.
Yes, exactly. And that feels good. That's a win.
You know, that's got to make up for backing off the fire. Yeah. This has been a particularly bad fire season, and the drought is still going on. There's still a lot of worry that things could get worse or that we could start more fires. What would you tell people as our fire prevention marshal?
Well, you know, when it comes to fires, the hard thing is we here in Florence live in a rural area, right? So we always tell people, protect your home. Right? Do what you can. The fire department will help and do what they can, but it takes a community or a team to be able to protect a home and a structure. So homeowners need to do their part. And there's a lot of steps and measures that are out there that you can actually do to take to protect your house. And some of them are very simple. Simple as cleaning out your gutters and cleaning up any debris that might be in that 0 to 5 feet, we call. So if you're going to eat this elephant, you want to try to do it one bite at a time. So we tell people, start at that 0 to 5 feet. Get anything that can catch on fire away from your house. So I guess if there's one thing that I can tell community members, in a rural setting, and even in Florence, we still live in an area that's heavily vegetated. I mean, if you go outside and you just look around, you can see how much vegetation we have around here. And with these dry conditions, all of this can burn. So with that, protect your home.
So the takeaway is don't stack kindling underneath your house.
Correct. Right? This is true. Yes.
Yeah, that stuff that's going to burn.
Yeah.
Anything else that I haven't asked that you think would be interesting for our listeners to know?
I guess one of the things that I would like to add to this is that the Boot Lake fire was a very big fire. And there's a lot of resources that were on this fire and working very hard. And I want to say that as a Sayusaw Valley fire and rescue personnel that went to this, I was very honored to be able to be asked to go and do this. And I know that working together as a team was amazing. And working with the organizations as a whole is fantastic. And we don't get to see fires like that in our neck of the woods. And so the experience level, the amount of personnel and the staffing that we were working with, and the incident management teams that are controlling and directing traffic, as you might want to say, or giving orders to everybody, is incident management at its best. And I just want to say that I was honored and pleased to be able to go and do this. And hopefully in the future, we will be able to continue this effort in Oregon and be able to even go into California and Washington to be able to do what we do.
I don't think people realize how many agencies, how many people from all over the place end up coming in to fight these fires and to save people's homes and hopefully to save people's lives. And so I think we're really lucky to have all of you and you, Tony, on the front lines for us. I think that's really fantastic. That's Tony Miller, Fire Marshal with Sayusaw Valley Fire and Rescue, recently returned from the Boot Lake fire. Thanks for coming in and sharing your experiences with us and helping to keep us safe.
Thank you.
Coming up, a new degree program from Oregon Coast Community College. I'll speak with Larry Bowles, Director of Aquarium Science.